Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE-certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Thanks for listening to the Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, we got the news and auto designer extraordinaire with a very interesting story, Henrik Fisker. Fisker Karma, that sound familiar? Talk to him after the news. First, Geico. Do you own? Do you rent? We do one or the other. Now you need to bundle. You need to take your automotive insurance and bundle it with your renter's or homeowner's insurance and see how much you could be saving when you put it all under one roof. So you got so much to do around the house. Why make more work? Why not just bundle at Geico? Go to geico.com, get a quote, see just how much you could save. Make it easy at Geico. That's geico.com.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gino Grad. Breaking viral. All those crazy Trump tweets. Give me news with Gino Grad. Trouble in the Middle East. Celebrity drunk meltdowns. Need news with Gino Grad.
The news with Gino Grad.
We'll talk about kicking a man while he's down. One day after Dr. Dre was admitted to the hospital for a brain aneurysm, his Hilltop LA home was the target of an attempted burglary, and four suspects have been arrested, according to the LAPD. After a short pursuit, four suspects were detained. An investigation is ongoing. So what is this about a brain aneurysm? Well, he's thanking friends and fans for his well wishes. He's, I believe, over at Cedars. He wrote on Instagram, thanks to my family, friends, and fans for their interest and well wishes. I'm doing great, getting excellent care from my medical team. He went on to thank his doctors, said he'll be out of the hospital and back home soon. He's 55. He was rushed over to Cedars, and he's in stable condition. They're undergoing tests to determine what caused the bleeding in his brain.
Mm.
Maybe I'll see him around the hallways next time I'm there in the neuro department.
Yeah, good series. The Defiant Ones or Defiant Ones. I can't remember if it's The Defiant Ones or Defiant Ones.
I think it's The.
It always bumps me because there was a TV series in the 60s called The Defiant Ones. You guys know that?
No.
Yeah, there was a fairly popular network show, I think, called The Defiant Ones from like 60s television. It's always weird when they come up. I feel the same way.
Google
when they
buried it.
They call... yeah, what was that show?
Oh, is it? There's a Sidney Poitier, Tony Curtis movie.
Oh, a movie.
That's the movie where they're chained together.
Oh, yeah. Is it the
1958.
Is it The Defiant Ones?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
As is the documentary.
I miss movies where people were chained together. You know what I mean? And by the way, when you chain guys together, here's how it works. Like when you're in the prison, you go, all right, we need to chain everyone together. You got to go black, white, black, white, black, white. You can't go two white guys, and you can't go two black guys. You need a white guy and a black guy chained together so they can have their arguments about about race.
Do you think that, exactly.
Do you think that was one of the reasons they called it that between Dr. Dre and Jimmy Iovine?
I don't know. It was a great series, and I do. I like Jimmy Iovine, if that's in fact how we say his last name. I liked his let me be of service to everyone and get rich versus I'm going to argue with everyone and settle their fucking hash and not get rich. I liked his approach to life. And also, I realized that the guy who ran Interscope Records was also a crazy Porsche enthusiast, and Interscope ran Porsche 935s and Porsche whatevers, and the Interscope 935 shows up at my races all the time, and It was number was always 00, which I didn't know if that was a joke. I didn't know if it was like the offensive lineman with the 69, but it was a cool car with a cool color combo, but it was always double zeros. But whoever,
what was the color combo?
It was like black with some orange kind of color on it, like some white. It was just a cool looking scheme. If you find the Interscope 935, you go, oh, and I would see the guy who drove that car and stuff like that. But the guy who started Interscope, I guess, was a big race guy and sponsored his own 935. You got the DB9 Gill side by side, so says Max Zapata. Yeah,
oh, well.
It's a little hard to see, but the top one, it's like 2 inches long, and the bottom one, it's like 8 inches long, and that's just the next year or so. So somebody figured out what Chip Foose knew a long time ago. All right. Well, we wish him well. I don't know. I have never met Dr. Dre. Don't know a ton about him, but I admire his work, and I appreciate that that doc, which was, I guess, it was a multi-part series, but I can't remember if it was three
HBO
pieces.
It was a three-part series, I think.
Three-part. All right.
It was pretty badass. Oh, ooh, speaking of badass, look at that car.
Look at the Interscope
right,
935.
Red, orange, cream and black, it looks like.
It's kind of a badass-looking mobile, yeah. Right? Yeah. It's the same. Now, it's the same as my red Paul Newman 935 when you look at it, it's just a complete different color scheme.
Is that the Hawaiian Trop thing?
Yes, yeah, the body really and everything's cool. The same on it. All right,
well, here's some hot goss for you. I don't think we're gonna be shocked that we're finally having this conversation. Kim Kardashian and Kanye West seem to be getting a divorce. A source tells Page Six they're keeping it low-key, but they are done. Kim has hired divorce attorney Laura Wasser, and they are in settlement talks. We've heard that name before. The writing has been on the wall for a while. Kim hasn't been seen wearing her wedding ring. Kanye still holed up at his Wyoming ranch where he stayed over the holidays. An insider says Kim just had enough of Kanye's mental health struggles, crazy behavior, including running for president. For his part, Kanye said he is completely over the entire family and wants nothing to do with them. Not sure if that quote includes the many children they have. They have four kids, North, Saint, Chicago, and Psalm, who's only a month old. And it's done.
She gave birth a month ago? I did not.
Somebody did. Wasn't?
Oh, somebody
it might
did.
Have been a surrogate.
Oh, okay. That kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the thing about the Kardashians or the Wests or either one of them, that is a you know, roller coaster ride in Vegas. But that's not a let's relocate and live here full time. You know what I mean?
Like, sure.
I just feel like
fun place to visit.
Yeah, she needs to hook up with a Mark Zuckerberg type or somebody. Did I get that guy's name right?
Larry Miller, perhaps?
Yeah, like let's go a little lower key. You know what I mean?
But that's not who they are. I mean, you don't think she marries these guys because they have a little juice and they're in the public eye?
I am so naive that I never can understand any of it. Like, I get press and I get followers and popularity and wanting to sell product and, you know, having a publicist and, you know, doing maneuvering through the Hollywood and society and, you know, having your brand look like X, Y, and Z. But when it actually comes to the marriage part, it just seems like such a hassle if that's brand based. You know what I mean? Like, just feel like you got some kids, you're knocking on the door of 40, you're practically an attorney at this point. Just find a nice Jewish guy who's kind of behind the scenes, you know, not going
to... Yeah. Type.
After 4 years, I mean, after four kids, you think maybe it's time to settle down?
Yeah, who doesn't have, you know, bipolar disorder and just to kind of is not going to have wacky press conferences and run for president and think, you know, just a guy you can count on. Consistent.
You know the ones I like, and there's a couple of them, and I'm not necessarily talking about Grace Kelly, but I like the actresses that you're like, whatever happened to her? Oh, she's a countess now in Luxembourg or whatever. You go overseas, you find yourself a nice bit of royal, and then you just kind of have an amazing life in a castle.
Yeah.
And I'm not talking Meghan Markle. I'm talking like off the grid. Like the girl from the one I'm thinking of, but I know there's been more than one. The girl from My So-Called Life, Claire Danes' best friend. Okay. On My So-Called Life, and you'll know her face when you see her. She is, I believe she's a countess now. Mm. So that kind of thing could really be the way to go.
Yeah.
You'll know her the second you see her face.
What do you think? If you, let's say, if happiness was measurable and quantifiable, and you could kind of measure it like you could do a blood test, and see if you were 72% happy or 41% happy. What do you think, like, the Kim Kardashian, how do you think she'd do on that test versus somebody who had a little more of a pedestrian life and a schedule? Because I don't see, I think with Kim Kardashian, her flying private to Europe probably goes down in her brain as a hassle. Now, because there's probably something she has to do there, or there's someone didn't pack something, or there's some. It just doesn't seem like you could be happy with that many plates spinning constantly. I don't know.
I'll give what little insight I have into this, which is under the umbrella of no brains, no headaches. I'm very close with someone who went to high school with the Kardashians. Christy, keep it down over there, and. They're not reputedly the smartest bunch. And so I wonder if there's a thing where, like, you know, is your dog happy? Yeah, of course he is. He has no fucking cares in the world.
Yes.
Like, I think there could be a no brains, no headache happiness factor with Kim and some of her siblings.
Interesting. By the way, the actress I was thinking of was AJ Langer. She played Rayanne, the best friend, and she is now the Countess of Devon. She's a former actress, notable for her role as Rayanne Graff, and now she's a countess. So that's the kind of life we should all aspire to have.
Oh, nice.
And then, of course, there's the actual Countess Luann from the Real Housewives of Manhattan.
You're more familiar with her.
Speaking of dogs being happy, Phil hit an all-time low.
No.
He's getting up on the counter. He's polishing off all the cookies and all the scones and all the anything that gets left on the countertop now from the holidays. Took down an entire sack of Hall's mentholated lozenges.
Jeez,
he has no filter.
It's going to rip through his esophagus.
He's not discerning at all.
He has no fucking
so now
filter.
What? He's mentholated.
He's mentholated. He's not going to have a sore throat for 71 years.
Oh, my God. I feel like that could do some, like, acidic damage. Is he going to the vet for this, or he's fine?
I got
to
tell you, all that shit they tell you your dog needs to go to the vet for, they ride it out. He polished off an entire box of See's candy over the holiday.
Wow.
What is he, me?
God. That's the only time I've been angry at him. Like, I fucking love See's candy. Yeah.
The best. The almond roast is the best.
It's all the best. Literally got up on the entry hall cabinet table, took the box, got into the box, polished off every single piece of See's candy in the thing. And
it would be so great if he left one, like, strawberry nougat.
Yeah,
one
exactly.
Like.
He rejected the lemon-flavored one.
Well, or he does what I do, which is take the half bite and go, fah, and then at some point circle back because you're essentially a junkie and eat the one that's you right. rejected 20 minutes ago because
that's
it wasn't
always,
good enough for you.
That's always the worst move because it's your last flavor. Now it's your last bite. You've saved the worst for last.
And you have to take a good look in the mirror. Like, how strong is your resolve not to eat this? And the answer is, I'll fucking eat it. Zero. I just got to get through everything else first.
That's you breaking your kid's piggy bank. You just look at the mirror. Mm-hmm. Like, what
that's
happened?
Right. I think this is very Jewish, from what I understand. I don't know if you guys grew up around this. I hated it. My family loves it. Did you guys grow up around dark chocolate-covered orange peels?
Yes, I know. Yeah. I didn't grow up around them, but I know what you're dealing with.
The Jews seem, that's always like a gift you bring to somebody's house.
Like literally orange rind?
Kind of, like a jellied, candied orange peel.
Oh, I thought you meant like an orange peel. Like, that's disgusting.
That does sound like something we'd do. But it's essentially chocolate, dark chocolate covered orange. Those flavors to me do not go together.
Well, I think that Jews, they need, you know, if they were just going to eat a piece of red velvet cake alone, they would have to put a tack in their shoe and step on it in between bites. Because we need a little surus, you know what I mean? A little pain. Nothing's free. Nothing's free.
That's why at the Passover dinner table for Passover, you have to have the bitter herb and the salty water to remind you of the tears of your ancestors.
Right.
So you're Wonder Woman was snacking on those.
God forbid you just enjoy something free and clear. You know what I mean?
Right.
And also, I think it's from the people that brought you halva, which is essentially sand with honey in it, in a brick. Where is the origins of halva?
I think it's
definitely in the Middle East somewhere. It's definitely
Turkey, India, Lebanon.
Ugh.
The marzipan crowd.
You know what
also
I want to?
A great dessert.
You know I want to tell those people. I've said it many times. I'll say the same for Mexico and many of these other cultures. You know how you guys are too lame to make your own jet fighter airplane, so you buy the shit from us, all these other countries? Mm-hmm. You don't make your own stealth fighter. We sell you one of ours when we're done with it, or we'll sell you a new one depending if you're an ally or not. But you guys aren't capable of making your own shit, but we'll make it, and we'll sell it to you. I feel like we need to implement that with desserts. You know what I mean? Hey, Lebanon, we got this covered.
We don't need any more dates, sugar-coated dates.
You're going to drop a pallet on you with a umbrella, or is it going to be a parachute?
Yes.
Just floating down.
Yeah, like you guys, we gave you 500 years. You came up with halva and, you know, dates with, you know, vinegar on them or something.
Right.
We got a little something called apple pie. We'll bring it by. Just pay us. We'll put it in the airplane we drop off. How about that?
Yeah, devil food.
Yeah.
We got all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, just outsource it. It's not your thing. You know what I mean? Let your people rejoice. And by the way, you know, this ain't a hate crime, and it doesn't make you Benedict Arnold for enjoying some real dessert. I feel that same way about there's countries that can't do wine very well. Like if you ever go, like I love Hungarian food, but the fucking wine tastes like shit. So it's weird, harsh. Like ox blood, whatever. And then you go into the Hungarian place and you go, can I have a glass of Pinot Noir? And they go, we have ox blood and we have thicker ox blood. And you're like, ugh. I want wine, but I don't want your fucking wine. And their thing is like, well, we're Hungarian. This is our wine. It's like,
this is our version of wine.
Is there a Trader Joe's in the neighborhood? Like, couldn't you guys just spend $9 and get in a decent bottle of Pinot and just put it in the back and charge me $11 for a glass? I could enjoy my goulash with that.
I'm fine with that.
Yeah. I feel, and also, I'll take it a step further. I'll go with Japanese places spreading out their beer menu a little, or Thai places. You know, like there's nothing wrong with a Japanese beer. There's nothing wrong with a Thai beer. But give me a couple other choices.
Give me an option.
That's fine.
Kirin, Ichiban, and Coors.
You go down to the Cheesecake Factory. They're not like, we only have beer that tastes like cheesecake. They're like, we got every fucking beer you want. You're here to enjoy yourself. That's not right. Not adhere. This is not a compulsory thing. You know what I mean? You're not being judged. You like Pinot Noir at the or the Mexican place, but you like the Pinot Noir at the Hungarian place, and you should be able to have that.
Yeah. Good food, good wine.
Have you guys ever done the corkage move? Have you ever brought wine?
Are you shitting me?
I'm sure Brian has.
Dude, that's all we do.
That's all you do.
Okay, I'm exaggerating, but for a nice, for like a date night, or this is fucking 2019 and before, for like a night out or a nice restaurant, yes, 100%. We are probably 80% of the time we bring our own wine.
Is it a price thing? Is it a selection thing? How does the price thing break down once they do the corkage thing? And what is the average corkage thing?
A restaurateur could tell you, and it depends, but it's generally 100%. Like if you're or more, like if it's a $100 bottle of wine, you're going to pay upwards of $200 or more for it at the restaurant. So if we're bringing what we consider a nice bottle of wine, let's say a $50 bottle of wine, we know that at the restaurant it's going to cost us $110, $120 bucks. But we if it with the corkage at say $30-$35. That's a all in $85 investment. I mean, it's not really about the saving. It's also about, let's bring a wine we know we like, as opposed to you're really rolling the dice a lot of the time at the restaurant. You know what I mean? They're going to open a bottle for you don't know anything about.
Max Patty, you have corkage at, where'd you work, at the Panda Express?
I've worked at various restaurants, but...
You're at the...
TGI Fridays.
TGI Fridays.
Mom's Macaroni
What's
Grill.
What's the corkage for you, TGI Fridays? Well,
weirdly, every restaurant I've worked at has corkage fees, and they range from about 10 to 20 bucks, even at, like, nicer restaurants.
So even at the Fondue Hut?
Yeah.
What was that place you worked?
The Melting Pot.
The Melting
Pot.
Oh,
God, yes. Yeah. Awesome.
I've decided that place is too good for me.
It is.
Because I used to pass it all the time when I was poor, and I go, I could never go in there.
Drew used to go all the time.
Really?
Yeah, he was a big customer over there.
I got to talk to Drew and see how he's doing. I haven't spoken to him in a couple of days.
The Melting Pot has to be one of those food services that will not survive because it's too communal. Yeah. Because you're dipping.
Same with the Benihanas of the world. You're all facing each other.
Maybe we could fold the two businesses in together and they could just dump cheese onto the Benihana grill and have everyone run for their life.
Pour the cheese into the onion
volcano.
That's
actually overflow. That's good.
Good name for cheese V.
Asparagus.
The cheese volcano.
Asparagus about the markup and the wine and the everything. Yeah. He's the expert.
On one hand, he is. On the other hand, he'd go, hey, you got to talk to the guy at the whatever.
I got people for that.
Yeah, he probably doesn't dabble. But all right, what else we got, Gina?
So on January 5th, 2 days into The View, co-chair Meghan McCain's return from maternity leave, she and Joy got into it, and we didn't get to it yesterday. And Behar reminded McCain that there is no love lost in that relationship. I don't know if you've seen this clip, but they came out swinging. So McCain spoke up during the Hot Topics segment when Behar said there's much more trouble in the Republican Party than in the Democrat Party right now, which made McCain launch into examples of all the Democrat infighting with, you know, the squad and Bernie versus Schumer and Pelosi. And that's when things got personal. Here's the clip.
Bernie Sanders also coming out saying he's angry. The idea that there isn't fighting within the Democratic Party
speaking.
As well.
I'm talking about
you missed me so much when I was on maternity leave. You missed me so much. You missed fighting with me.
I did not miss you.
Okay, somebody answer the question.
Can I weigh in?
Or I'm moving on.
I'd like to weigh in.
Okay, guys,
rude. Like,
hold on. Stop. Everybody stop.
That's so rude.
Wow. You know when Whoopi's going, hey, ladies, get it together. It's out of fucking control.
Yeah, you've lost control.
Show's gone off the rails.
That show has been around for 20 years. I mean, I did that show.
Didn't you do it back in like the Meredith Vieira days?
Yeah, certainly since the radio days.
I think Barbara Walters was on it when I did it. Created in 97.
Wow.
I mean, literally coming up on a 25-year run of that show.
Wow.
What could be better than being on a show like that? You want to talk about just hammering paychecks and saying nothing. So,
was Whoopi part of the original cast?
No,
it was Rosie.
Yeah.
I think Rosie O'Donnell the original cast?
I don't know. We have to figure out the original cast. And I don't know that... I don't know that Barbara was on full time, at least after about 4 or 5 years.
Wasn't there a Hasselbeck involved?
Yeah, it's Joy Behar, Meredith Vieira, Debbie Matenopoulos, Barbara Walters, and Star Jones.
Yes. They always, it's kind of, if you're the conservative or the Republican voice on it, I think it wears you down extra fast. It's kind of like dog years because it's always like a 3 or 4 against 1. They don't do like a 2-on-2 kind of thing. It's kind of a Bill Maher setup.
Or the target.
There's a spot. Hey, Max Spada, you can find in 50 years we'll all be chicks. I think I covered The View. Hasn't been played in a while, but I think I covered Joy Behar. And my take on her comedic sensibility quite nicely covered in 50 Years We'll All Be Chicks. Yeah. But also, much like the aforementioned Caillou, when you're just doing shows for unemployable yentas, then the bar's not so high. You know what I mean?
It's like, not a demanding audience.
It's not a demanding audience. They just want to see familiar faces arguing with one another. All right, I'll give you a minute to find that, Max Zapata. We probably have the audio somewhere, maybe.
Yeah, so yeah, I'll have to scrub through it.
First, let me tell you about LifeLock. Increased cybersecurity attacks on pharmaceutical workers' phones and tablets as they work from home. That is a problem. There's sensitive medical data, and it could be exposed. It's important to understand how cybercrime and identity theft are affecting our lives. Every day, we put our information at risk on the internet. Cybercriminals around the world keep finding new ways to steal identities. And you can miss certain threats if you're just monitoring your credit alone. Good thing, there's LifeLock, which detects a wide range of identity threats like your social security number for sale on the dark web. If they detect your information has potentially been compromised, they will send you an alert. Protect yourself with LifeLock. Right, Dawson?
No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats you might miss on your own. Join now and save up to 25% off your first year by using promo code Adam. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK or head to LifeLock.com. Use promo code Adam for 25% off.
All right. Well, we'll let Max Zapata find that clip, or at least that passage. And Dawson can read it if you find it. And we'll let Gina move on to her next story.
After saying those words, giving those names, when's the last time you heard the name Debbie Matenopoulos? I just had to look her up. Remember? She was
a countess somewhere?
Yeah, probably.
Well, she married the Prince of Lesbonia and has moved away.
That's right. Yeah, totally forgot about her. She was part of that original five. Anyway, the show's not going to go on time, that is, for the Grammys. They've been postponed to March 14th, Pi Day. I believe that's March 14th. Ooh. This year's ceremony was scheduled for January 31st, but organizers are saying there's no way. We can't even do this show in a scaled down, no audience way by then.
What's going to change between now and March 14th? And could they not see this coming?
Yeah. I mean, I think they thought they would do the no audience version, but they said that they can't even pull that off. Trevor Noah had previously been named a host. The 2021 Grammy nominations were led by Beyonce. She picked up 9. Dua Lipa, Taylor Swift, Roddy Ricch followed with 6 nods each. But I think that's going to be, yeah, either scaled down or moved. Do we think that February is going to be just like vaccine bonanza?
That's what I'm like. Is March going to be all things, all systems go? I doubt it.
I doubt it as well. But I mean, especially in Los Angeles, maybe you could have the thing in Boca Raton or something. But then you're also not going to get, I think the performers and the people that are nominated are amongst the people that are sort of most conscious of the COVID-19. So you'd have difficulty getting them out. But now's the year, if you're a struggling band, this is the year you lie to everyone that you're nominated for Grammys, because you just go, I got nominated for Best Original Song and Best Original Performance, but it was a fucking shit show, and they kept canceling stuff. Right. And no one will ever check you.
That's right.
All right. Let's do 2 more.
Okay. Well, I don't know if you saw this. There was like some like NBC.com thing where you could see in your county and your state and your city what number you are in line to get the vaccine.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Your windbreaker idea is coming true.
It's funny because
Should do it. Yeah.
Oh, that's right. I think
size
it's going to be
hog.
Around 8 million people before me.
Oh, really?
8 million. So, I mean, and you just put in your own stats,
it's
what your age is.
It's the exact opposite of what you're looking for out of, like, the Vietnam draft, right?
That's right.
You would like.
Exactly.
Right.
Come on, 8 million. So, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo is now threatening to fine hospitals up to $100,000 if they don't finish their first round of inoculations by the end of the week.
That's dragging their heels.
Yeah, that's going to modernhealthcare.com and a few other sources. He's blaming bureaucracy as the chief reason for these delays, public hospitals in particular. The governor also threatened to stop sending the vaccine to hospitals that don't use their supply. Meanwhile, NewYork1.com reports Cuomo says vaccinating someone out of the state designated order, which basically constitutes vaccine fraud, could fine you up to $1 million and the loss of your state license.
That's another plot point from Contagion.
Yeah.
That's right.
Cuomo's like, I blame bureaucracy for the inability to distribute the vaccine. All right, I got to go. I have to create more bureaucracy.
Yeah, I have to hang this red tape.
I've taken long enough. I've taken 2 minutes off from more bureaucracy. So anyway, I blame it. Now I got to go work on more of it.
Right.
Okay.
I got to go be part of the problem.
Yep. Max Pata, that? It's got to be.
Yeah, I found it's a different order from the actual book. So it was you recorded in different order, but I found it just it's loading up right now.
Oh, okay. Sorry. One more, Gina Grand.
Yeah, let's talk about those games, those beloved games that become movies. Some make more sense than others. Well, we have a game, and really, to be fair, probably more about the creator, but a movie based on the Rubik's Cube is in the works. Mm. The film will be about how Professor Erno Rubik's toy became a pop culture phenomenon in the 80s.
It's the story of the making of the toy. That's
which is kind of cool. The Rubik's Cube was invented by Erno Rubik in 1974, licensed as a toy in 1980. To date, over 450 million Rubik's Cubes have been sold around the world. Since 2018, amateur and professional speed cubers from all over the world have faced each other, battling for the chance to prove their skills in the Rubik's Cube World Championship Finals in Boston. So this could end up potentially being a pretty interesting movie.
I've never tried a Rubik's Cube, just like I told you, I've never played Scrabble. Because my thing is I already know I'm dumb. I don't need a fucking punt, pass, and kick competition to prove how dumb I am. I get it.
But you're mechanical and you're intuitive. Yeah, like, Rubik's Cube might be your way into the smart guy club.
Sonny performed an IQ test, an online IQ test on me a couple of nights ago that he got 10 out of 10 on. And
it said tilt.
I got 3 out of 10. I think.
Boy.
So I'm, functionally retarded. I think it puts the classification I got where he got like a near genius. All right, let's bring it home, Gina Grad.
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina Grad.
That was the news with Gina Grad.
We have the audio clip of is this from 50 Years of Wallaby Chicks?
Yes.
And this is my take on The View?
Yes.
Here we go.
The View. I know I'm a guy. I know I'm supposed to hate The View. But I don't hate The View because I have a dick. I hate The View because I have a brain. The View is going on what feels like its 35th season. It has numerous Emmy nominations and even an Emmy win. And it's a disjointed, scattered piece of shit that's hosted by some of the least compelling, most untalented people that have ever graced a television set. If this show consisted of 5 guys sitting around talking over each other with the occasional hackneyed joke awkwardly shoehorned into the meaningless conversation, it would have been yanked off the air years ago. You see, 10 in the morning, all the smart people are at work, and that leaves The View's audience. Barbara Walters is about as interesting and funny as that one old teacher you had in junior high. I know everyone treats her like she's some kind of national treasure, but she's clearly past her prime, and no one at that show would dare utter a word. It's about the same relationship Saddam Hussein shared with his co-workers. When she finally decides to hang up her dentures and call it a career, there'll be a silent celebration akin to what the guards did after the Wicked Witch got a bucket of water tossed on her head. On her last show, the lavalier mics will be recording a lot of, "We'll miss you, we'll stay in touch, we don't know how we'll carry on without you," but the inner monologue will skew a little more toward, "Have fun on the Greyhound bus to hell, bitch." Sherry Shepherd is dumb. She's read one book and it's the Bible. She's not ha-ha funny. She's more, "We need a fat chick who's not funny funny." Elizabeth Hasselbeck gets a pass because she's already being punished on a daily basis. Could you imagine if your lot in life is to be wedged between Barbara Walters and Sherry Shepherd? She's the lunch meat between a stale piece of sourdough and the dumbest slab of pumpernickel that ever hit the day-old bin at the bakery. Whoopi Goldberg, what happened to the unstoppable force of comedy that had us doubled over with spun gold such as Burglar, Jumping Jack Flash, and Eddie? An Emmy for The View? An Oscar for Ghost? She deserves those about as much as Elvis deserved his black belt in Taekwondo. Joy Behar, she's the funny one. That's like saying Marwan al-Sheehy was the funniest of the 9/11 hijackers.
All right. Well, that was that was 11 years ago, and I think it still holds true. All right. Fame designer Henrik Fisker, genius Henrik Fisker, will join us in a second. I'll do a one-on-one with him. I'll bid adieu to Bald and Gina. We'll be right back with Henrik Fisker right after this.
For just $25, you get wine and gifts. Ace's favorite stuff or products from ACS. Every single month, you get the drink you choose. It's hard to beat cool stuff and lose. Adam's Monthly Nut. Adam's Monthly Nut.
You heard Dick. A new year of Adam's Monthly Nut hath begun. We kick off 2021 with a bang, with products like Promisant Delay Spray to keep you going all year long, a collapsible water bowl to cure feminine canine hydration syndrome anywhere it strikes, a Secret Santa gift, because let's be honest, we got Corolla gifts galore at the warehouse, and a digital download of the first three glorious years of the Ace Awards. The year of the devil is behind us. Get ready for an all-new year of Adam's Monthly Nut.
All right, here with Henrik Fisker. He's joining us. He's a famous automotive designer. He's an entrepreneur. Kind of on the electric vehicle thing, the boutique electric vehicle thing, sort of on the vanguard of that with the Karma so many years ago. Good to see you again, Henrik.
Hey, good to see you, Adam. Unfortunately, I'm not the IT guy I should be, so sorry for being late here in the Zoom world.
That's all right. I'm horrible at this stuff, too. I want to get into the new vehicle, the Fisker Ocean, the all-electric SUV, and where you think this market is going and thoughts. But let's bring it back to you and sort of your origin story. You're born where?
I was born in Denmark and came over to the United States in 94. In the meantime, I'm American. And I've lived here in Los Angeles for quite a while.
And is design always your thing? Is automotive always your thing? Is it design first and automotive second? Like, I love cars and I race cars, but I really like the design of the cars almost as much as I like driving the cars, maybe even more.
Yeah, you know, I love cars, and I wanted to be a car designer since I can remember. And instead of doing homework in school, I was drawing cars, and all my notebooks were full of cars. And so I've just always been drawing cars. And when all the other kids stopped drawing cars and became grown-ups, I kept drawing cars. And eventually, you know, I went to Art Center College of Design. Design school in Pasadena, and then I went into cars. My first job was at BMW in Munich in Germany in 1989.
And then you made your way to many car companies, Aston Martin being one of them. I have the DB9, which I've probably told you about before. I think it's just one of the most beautiful shapes on a car.
You told me, actually, that you removed the ugly little side markers that we had to put for the U.S. market.
Well, that was something I brought up earlier in this podcast that you obviously didn't hear because you're just joining us. But as the story goes, I gave the car to Chip Foose, and I had a couple things I wanted him to do. I didn't like the side marker. That's a DOT thing that the U.S. market requires, Department of Transportation. I also didn't like the lights for the license plate frame. For the rear license plate. I thought it stood out too far and was too bulky. So I had him remove a few of those things. But one of the things that I thought was interesting is I had my list of little things I wanted Chip to do on the car, but he walked right up to that chrome strip by the side gill that went onto the door. And he said, the part on the door is not long enough. And I said, that's not on my list, Chip. And he said, well, it's on my list. I'm going to lengthen it. And I thought, well, that, okay. And he did it, and sure enough, it looked better. And then I think the following year, Aston Martin came out with, you know, the next year, the DB9, and that piece had been lengthened. Does that sound familiar, or is there any story behind that?
You know, I had left by then, I believe. So, but, you know, sometimes there is also coincidences where somebody will do something exactly at the same time, which is why a lot of times people say, how come this guy copied that guy? But, you know, it takes several years to design a car. And there is truly times when two car designers are thinking alike and things happen to end up looking similar.
So let's talk about the Karma. I actually drove the Karma and interviewed you for a car show I did way back in the day. And I was really impressed by it. I was impressed by it because, you know, back then the electric car market was sort of golf carty at best. And the Fisker Karma was low slung and sexy and had a very Euro kind of Gran Turismo kind of grand touring car kind of feel to it. What year did you conceive of the Karma?
You know, I designed that way back in 2007. And then, of course, we had to go out and raise money, which took forever. And it eventually got to market in 2011, which, if you think back, was about 2 years before the Model S, or 1.5 years before the Model S came to market from Tesla. So we were really early out with this vehicle, probably too early. A lot of people bought the car without even knowing it had the possibility of driving electric and were wondering what was that plug in the back. So it was kind of interesting because we caught definitely the imagination and the desire and a lot of people who were just car fans and loved the car. And but it was sort of, I think, the sort of first step to try and make a cool, sexy looking EV. And that's kind of sort of stayed with the brand as where we are today and what we're planning in the future.
Was the technology good enough? Well, I shouldn't say good enough, but how far have we come from a battery? I guess it's mainly battery technology from when you were designing the Karma to designing the Ocean, the latest offering from Fisker.
No, I mean, back in the day, literally, we would walk into these crazy sort of scientific looking warehouses where some scientists were building batteries, and it was all kind of in the early days. There was really no choice for batteries at the time. The technology was new. I mean, there was really just three battery companies. There was LG Chem at the time, which GM had signed an exclusive with. Then there was Panasonic that gone with Tesla. And then we were with a small American startup called A123. And unfortunately, as we started delivering the Fisker Karma, then they went bankrupt in the middle of the whole thing, so we couldn't continue. So fast forwarding today, absolutely. Now we got a lot more experienced battery companies. We got some conglomerates in the meantime. You know, CATL, LG Chem has become huge, Samsung, SK. So you now see all these larger battery companies that have had about 10 years of development. So we are finally at a point, I think it's sort of an inflection point, I think, that's going to happen in the next 2-3 years, where you're going to see electric vehicles finally coming out that has long enough range, are about the same price as a similar gasoline vehicle. So I think we're finally there to see this sort of revolution happen going to us electric.
Yeah, I think, to me, the chronology or the trajectory would be, at some point, buying a electric car didn't really make sense unless you were, you know, Leonardo DiCaprio and trying to make a statement, you know, years ago. It's just the range wasn't there, the reliability, what have you. We're now at the point where it kind of seems like a coin toss, almost like electric or gasoline powered. And then 2.5 years from now, it'll be at the point where you'd be dumb not to buy an electric car. Is that kind of what it feels like? If it was like a graph going, it was like going uphill for the last 10 years. Now we've kind of reached the summit and it's going to start heading down, which is my kids. I have 14-year-old twins and their first cars are going to be electric, and I'm sure their last cars are going to be electric. They're not going to know, they're not going to know electric any more than they know a manual stick shift.
Yeah, I think you're right on, Adam. And I think that, you know, what's going to happen is essentially if you buy a normal gasoline car in 2 or 3 years, it's probably going to be worthless 5 years later. So I think that automatically will, it's just like buying a manual cheap car. You can't sell it. So what's going to happen, as happened with the manual, is going to go into becoming expensive sports cars. So I think we're going to have sports cars for a while. They'll be gasoline cars. And I think people are going to end up enjoying them like we enjoy horses. I mean, nobody rides the horse to work anymore. They may still own the horse, but they don't ride it to work.
But they enjoy
That's what's going to change. You're not going to use a gasoline car for your daily commute, I think, in 10 years. You may still use it for pleasure, but not for your daily commute.
Interesting. Yeah. Again, sort of like the manual stick shift. You wouldn't anybody, especially if you live like we do in Los Angeles, it would sound insane to sit in traffic with a manual. So is obviously as the technology goes up, the price comes down, the more companies get involved, they compete. The price goes down, accessibility goes up. Where are we at? If it's all kind of was predicated on battery technology, and I'll give you a stupid example, but I think it's apt. I used to fly model airplanes, you know, gas-powered remote control ones. You know, it's a fun hobby. And when I was doing it 15 years ago, there were a couple electric planes out there, but the battery was too heavy. They didn't really last that long, and it wasn't really, if you really wanted to participate, you kind of had to have a gas tank on your plane. Now, probably 80% of the market is just electric planes because it's cleaner, it's easier, it's quieter, and we have the batteries. They're not big bricks weighing the plane down anymore. So if it's about the battery technology, and we've come so far in the last 5-8 years in the battery technology, are we going to advance that fast in the next 5-8 years with battery technology?
No, I think the next sort of 7 years is going to be the current technology we have that will maybe have a 5% improvement per year. I think we're all waiting for the next big revolution in battery technology. And I've done a lot of research. We have, you know, an internal lab at Fisker where we did a lot of work. And I will say with my knowledge, I think we're at least 7 to 10 years away for another big revolution. And I don't think we need it right now. You know, a lot of people right now feel like they must have a super long range in their electric car. And it just kind of comes from the fact that with a gasoline car, you never think about range. You know, whatever direction you drive in America, there will be a gas station within 100 miles, no matter where you go. And so you kind of forgot about range anxiety. Electric vehicles are a little different. We have the feel of range anxiety. We feel we must have a 300-mile range. And I think that will continue in the next few years. But eventually, I think if you imagine you own 2 electric cars, I bet you in a few years from now, your second electric car doesn't really need to have more than 100-mile range, because when do you go 100 miles in a day? Most electric cars are just humming around in the city, doing errands, dropping kids in school. And for that, 100 miles is more than enough. But we don't feel right now that it is enough. So that's why we needed that longer range of sort of 300 miles, which we now have achieved. And I think all car makers can achieve 300-mile range. And that's sort of what a gas tank lets you go in a normal car, sort of on average, is sort of the minimum in the car industry. So I think that that has sort of led to the point now where everybody can pretty much buy an electric car. There are still a few exceptions. I think if you truly are going cross country or some big trips, it's not so convenient still because you have to spend too much time charging. But I think for 80% of the population and the daily drives, an electric car is actually better than a gasoline car. And don't forget, most of us can charge our car at home. We don't even have to stop at a gas station. I just charge my car every night. I don't even think about it anymore.
I know. It's funny. Everyone always talks about range anxiety. But the anxiety I always feel, and I get caught in this once in a while, is when I'm driving my internal combustion engine SUV home and I realized the range finder says 19 miles, you know, and I'm like, oh, I got to drive to LAX tomorrow at 5 a.m. And I have anxiety, which is I don't want to get gas tonight, but I sure as hell don't want to get gas tomorrow at 4:30 a.m. And I wish I could just plug it in and have that range obviously tacked on it. Yeah, it's an anxiety that is kind of maybe Americans have this more so than other cultures. We have this thing where it's like everyone wants to drive a huge pickup truck with big knobby tires on it, but no one ever goes off road. But we want to know it's there. You know what I mean? Or people have a gun and they go, okay, you keep your gun in your home and then you keep the ammunition in another room and you keep the gun in a safe. And it's like, well, how's that going to protect you? Then it's like, I want to know it's there, you know? And I always say to everyone, once in a while, if you're going to drive from Los Angeles to the Grand Canyon with your family, then just rent a Denali and go on a vacation. And then when you're never going to do it, but if you need to do it, you can rent an SUV, and then for the other 99.9% of your driving, you could just plug it in when you get home. You used to work for BMW, right?
Used to work for BMW. On my first job, designed the BMW Z8 sports car there.
Yes.
That was my claim to fame a bit, and that was a fun project.
That was a sort of throwback to the 507, if correct. I got that right, which are 2.5-3 million bucks these days, that old BMW. Not a great V8 engine in that car, sidebar. But the Z8s are coming along nicely in terms of they sold for a premium. It's always a good sign if you design a car, the sticker's 155 and the dealers want 275 for them when they were selling them. Then they kind of dropped off. And now they're having this renaissance. Like they're getting pretty expensive at auction these days.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, when I designed that car, I was young and it was my first vehicle and I just went all out. And my idea was just to make sort of the pure essence of what is a BMW, you know, the ultimate driving machine, super sculptural. The 507 was a clear sort of image that I had in my head, and it kind of was, the assignment was, how would the 507 have looked like if it would have evolved like the Porsche 911 over all these years, which of course this kind of did. So I kind of had to think about how would it have looked like. And, you know, nobody cared about this project within BMW when I was doing it. Nobody thought it was going to happen. So I was left alone, which is very unusual because normally there's always a whole bunch of cooks in the kitchen that want to take part of it. But in this case, I was left with a few engineers in the corner and, you know, I designed the car and by magic, it was just decided, hey, let's build it pretty much the way it was, which is very unusual in the car industry.
Yeah, I brought up BMW because I went a few years back to look at their i8, which is kind of their sort of hybrid supercar thing, Tom Cruise movie kind of car. It's a beautiful car. The plug-in range was like 18 miles. Yeah. And I remember thinking, why? Why is it 18 miles? I want to be able to get to work and back without plugging it in. And they're like, that's the range. I don't know why. And some of the cars, like the Leaf, I think may have been this way with the Nissan. Some of these cars had like well under 50 miles worth of range. And, you know, maybe it's all technology, but that always seemed like a weird call to me.
Well, you know, I think we're still, the industry is still tackling the whole idea of electric vehicles. And I think it's divided into two. It's the traditional car industry, which, let's face it, they don't really like this transition. They're kind of annoyed by it because they are producing millions of gasoline cars, making a lot of money on it. Now they have to spend all this money on a new technology they're not really prepared for. And that's why you have seen this influx of new EV companies. You know, we just went out, did a public offering, raised $1 billion, became public. And you have seen other electric startups out there and Wall Street is pouring money into them. And I think it's because we can start on a clean sheet of paper. We can start from scratch. and we can look at customers and saying, hey, I think they want that. We don't have any existing customers. I don't have to worry about what they think. So I think that that's where you're going to see the sort of two different variations of what companies think electric cars should be. And, you know, the fact is, you know, of course, Tesla is a competitor to us. And whatever you think about Tesla, the fact is no traditional car company has yet made an electric car that has the same range as a Tesla. And they've had 7 to 8 years and trillions of dollars to do it. And it just shows you that when you have such a radical transformation in technology, it may not be the old, you know, famous companies that knows how to do it. Just like it wasn't Nokia that knew how to make a phone without buttons. They had, you know, 100 different models with, you know, dozens of buttons on them. But when they finally had to make a phone without buttons, they couldn't do it and they disappeared.
Do you know Elon Musk? Do you guys talk? Do you trade recipes? How's that relationship?
No, we had a big fight back in the day and a lawsuit, which I won. And since then, we haven't really spoken, but we did spend some time together. I did a little bit of consulting work for Tesla back in 2000, I think it was 2006, 2007 in the super early days. He's a super smart guy, but no, I at this point, I think we're just sort of probably fierce competitors. He's obviously way ahead in the lead, so I got a lot of work to do still.
Well, let's talk about the Fisker Ocean. It's all electric SUV. It looks great, but let's just say I'm looking at the Tesla sort of mid-range. What is it? The 3? I'm trying to think of what their downsize SUV is. I can't remember.
The Y.
Yeah. So I'm looking at the Y. I'm looking at the Ocean. They're in the same ballpark price-wise, right? So you tell me why I should buy the Ocean.
Well, first of all, our vehicle actually starts, I would say, about $10,000 cheaper, which is quite a lot.
Oh, okay.
We are also, and this comes kind of back to design, Adam, where my view was that everybody who's making electric cars right now is trying to kind of make these crossover hatchbacks. And when you look at the actual market, the biggest sellers and the fastest growing market segment right now is SUVs. Mm-hmm. So I designed the Ocean to look more like a futuristic SUV and not a hatchback. I thought that was important. And we have kind of got a lot of people reserving the car, mainly because of the design. But then what we wanted to add to this was some features that nobody else have. So we have something pretty cool. And I know everybody's talking about software, and we'll have a lot of software and FI Pilot and all kind of stuff. But I wanted to have something that I thought nobody else have, and something that could make this vehicle a fun everyday vehicle. So we created something called the California mode. And what that means is you can press a button on the screen and all the windows, except for the front windscreen, rolls down. Also the little 3/4 rear windows, the rear hatch window, and the roof opens up. So it almost feels like, you know, the Jeep Wrangler, when you pull all the parts right off, you don't have to spend 3 hours doing it. You can do it in 10 seconds.
Right. You know? Or less. Right.
So that was kind of a big differentiator. And then we have created something called a flexible lease. I think the young generation of people, I actually still think they want a car. I know a lot of people say they don't want cars, but I think they do. But maybe they don't want to own the cars the way we did. Maybe they don't want to have all the hassle of, you know, that it means to own a car. So we have created a flexible lease where a young person can go out and lease our car for $3,000 down and $379 a month. Everything included, all service, full warranty, and you can give it back anytime. So if you lose your job, you can give it back in, like, after a month, 3 months, 6 months, it doesn't matter. So I think that's a very unique mobility solution that will appeal to a lot of the younger generation that maybe don't want to go and borrow $50,000 to buy a car.
Is it start at $37,000 and change?
Yeah, that's right.
And range is?
We'll have several different, but the top of the line range will be over 350 miles, which I think is pretty much the segment leader.
And where's the car physically assembled?
So, you know, I had to sort of take my ego and throw it out the window and say, okay, hey, what do I really want to do? I want to deliver a great car. So forget about me walking down the, you know, shop floor and showing how great I am at manufacturing cars. I know I can't manufacture a car better than Toyota. I looked at how difficult that had been for Tesla to get, you know, to manufacture vehicles. So we decided instead to kind of take a little bit the Apple Foxconn approach, you know, where Foxconn is this big conglomerate making all the Apple products. Mm-hmm. So we went to the world's third largest automotive supplier called Magna. It's a Canadian-Austrian company. And they're going to manufacture our car, guarantee the quality, guarantee the ramp up. And most people don't know, they manufacture, for instance, all the Mercedes G-Wagons for Mercedes. They manufacture BMW Z4, the BMW 5 Series, Jaguar I-Pace. So they already manufacture electric car. So they're specialists in this. So we have outsourced manufacturing. They're going to start in Austria to manufacture in a big plant there. And then later we might look at U.S. manufacturing together as well.
And how is the dealership slash purchasing slash leasing going to work? Are you going to have brick and mortar dealers? Is it all going to be online? How's that going to
work? Well, all the purchase is going to be online, or we have a proprietary app we launched, which we have about, I think, a little over 10,000 people who's already put down a deposit. It's about $250. And it'll all be online. We'll deliver the car to you at home or at your office, wherever you want it. When it comes to service, we have signed some initial agreements with a group called Cox Automotive. They do service for fleets. They do warehousing, logistics. So we will come and pick up the car when they need service. Because, you know, an electric car doesn't need scheduled maintenance. It's only either if you feel something is wrong or we get a message over the air that something needs service. Then we'll make an appointment with you. We'll come and pick the car up, bring it to service, and bring it back to you. So we will have some showrooms, you know, in some malls and some other place where you can go and, of course, check out the car, sit in it, and you can book a test drive. Because in the end of the day, a car is a car, and you're going to want to see it in reality. At least a lot of people's going to want to see it.
Last subject, the intelligent pilot, autopilot, for lack of a better term. What's this car going to have, and what do you kind of think the future is with that? A lot of people have been speculating back and forth, and driverless cars and things of that nature.
You know, I have a different take on driverless cars, you know, self-driving cars, and probably most other auto executives. I don't believe that fully autonomous vehicles are around the corner. Like, well, you're in a car without a steering wheel, you can just sleep, you know, while you go to work and all that. And the reason is that these things really only work in a perfect environment. Like, let's say you're behind a FedEx truck on a two-way street with a double yellow line. If that stops to deliver a package, and even if there's a police car behind you and he blocks the road, you would be able to break the law and pass that truck. And the police guy would probably go, yeah, I get that because that FedEx blocking the road. But if you can't program a car to break the law, what happens if something goes wrong and you kill a child, you know, and you program that car to break the law? So I think those are the type of things we're going to be up against for a very long time. So I think self-driving is more about creating valuable additions to the vehicle for you either to have fun or to feel safer. So, you know, like the lane keeping and all this type of stuff that you can get in cars, we want to take it a step further, and we want to take annoying things that you feel is annoying about driving. I want to take that and make it easy and you forget about it. Now, I won't reveal what it is, but we got some really cool ideas. We also have some cool entertainment ideas. One of them is I want you to be able to look on the road and see in the windscreen on a head-up display the lyrics of your favorite song so you can sing along and do karaoke while you're driving. That would be pretty cool. And then, of course, we need to make sure the car brakes if you're not paying attention. So those are kind of more of an entertainment value. So I think that's what we want to go at, not necessarily in the pursuit of making a fully self-driving car. I think that's too far off, at least for private cars.
I want to give you a plug, by the way. The website, Fisker, I-N-C, Fisker, I-N-C Incorporated, Fisker, I-N-C.com. And now if you go there, we can find out all about the Ocean and any other offerings from Fisker. Is there another supercar in your future? Do you have thoughts? And I don't want to sling shade at Elon Musk, but his electric car that was going to go 200 miles an hour, I kept saying, show me the car. because I get the 0 to 60, you know, sub 3 seconds with electric car. That's achievable. The over 200 miles an hour claim seemed less achievable to me. And I also figured if they did achieve it, they would have very good high res footage of them achieving that somewhere. But yeah, top speed. Does that seem like a claim that's sort of undoable today? Or can he do it, and can one do it in all electric car?
Look, I'm a car guy, so we definitely are going to have a supercar, cool car, one of these days. And we have I have a couple of ideas up the sleeve for that. That wasn't a priority right now for us. We wanted to get out with an affordable electric car. We think that was more exciting and interesting, quite frankly, because I've done a lot of supercars in my life, but we're definitely going to have another one. In terms of top speed, I think it's becoming less relevant with all the rules and regulations, even in Europe, where traditionally, you know, that was important. I mean, you still have free speed in Germany, but you got a lot of congestion. I think whether you need to do 200 miles now, I don't think, but I think a supercar is going to at least have to do about 150, 160 miles an hour to be real valid. Acceleration, you know, yes, we can now do even less than 2.5 second. I also think there's a point where, you know, acceleration and top speed becomes so insane that it's not even usable under any daily circumstance. And it kind of comes back. And I think, you know, that when you think back about these sort of fun cars in the 60s and 70s, I mean, they actually weren't that fast, but you could do a power slide at 20 miles an hour and have a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I mean, today, if you do a power slide in a supercar, you're probably doing 100 miles an hour and you're going to get killed if something goes wrong. So the question is, can we bring fun back in cars at reasonable speeds? I almost think that's more important, fun to drive, than just the sheer speed.
From your mouth to God's ears, Henrik Fisker. And again, FiskerINC.com is where you go, and you can listen to a long-form one-on-one with Henrik and I on Take a Knee this Monday. Henrik, thanks so much for joining us. Always, always informative and fun.
Great to see you again, Adam. Take care.
Last but not least, let me hit Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Will you do one or the other? How about you save a bunch of money by bundling? You take your policies over to geico.com and take your homeowners or your renter's insurance along with your auto policy, put them together and bundle them at Geico. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see just how much you could be saving at geico.com. All right. Couple tickets left in Naples, Florida, off the hook. Stand-up coming up January 15th, 16th, live podcast. And we're also doing stand-up there as well, almost sold out. Burbank Pickwick Bowl, January 23rd, Oklahoma City. Bricktown Comedy Club, February 26th, 27th. Kansas City, Royal Oak, Michigan, Waukegan, Illinois. Just go to adamcarolla.com for all that. And until next time, Ed Calderon joining us tomorrow. Always good to talk to Ed. Until next time, Adam Carolla for Henrik Fisker and Gina Grad and Bob Bryan saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow Ace on Twitter at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744. And pick up Adam's book, I'm Your Emotional Support Animal. It's available everywhere, and the links are at adamcarolla.com.
Hey, movie lovers, who needs a theater when you have Pluto TV? Grab your popcorn and your streaming device because free movies are here. Pluto TV is your home for movies. Great movies are playing anytime in over 20 exclusive movie channels of action, horror, rom-coms, and more. Watch hits like Saving Private Ryan, Pretty in Pink, and Charlie's Angels all for free. No signups, no fees, no contracts. Ever. Download the free Pluto TV app on any device.
Check engine light on? Take the guesswork out of your check engine light with O'Reilly Veriscan. It's free and provides a report with solutions based on over 650 million vehicle scans verified by ASE certified master technicians. And if you need help, we can recommend a shop for you. Ask for O'Reilly Veriscan today.
O'Reilly.